Chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the regular meeting of the commission, November 16th, 2022. The public may listen to the meeting in real time by following the instructions listed at the top of the commission's meeting agenda currently posted on the commission's website. In addition, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety. For the benefit of the public, particularly those who may be listening to the meeting by telephone, I will take a I will take a roll call so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please state that you're present. Commissioner Barry. Commissioner Einhorn.
Present.
Commissioner Fusashi.
Here.
Present.
Commissioner Hankins.
Present.
Commissioner Streeter.
Here.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan. Present. Similarly, when the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission meeting of October 26, 2022. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of October 26, 2022.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded, and I'll conduct the roll of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn.
Yes.
Commissioner Fusashi.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. I will call the docket. If you wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it, and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called, excuse me, with one exception. We have one matter that needs to move ahead of others, and I will call that as number three, so that it appears in that order. So the first matter is docket number FIC 2020-0528, Earl Bradley versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction. Are you there, Mr. Bradley?
Present.
Okay. You'd like to go forward on that, correct?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Attorney Brown. So we'll mark that ready, Mr. Bradley and Attorney Brown. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0624, Anthony Collymore versus Chief Police Department, City of Waterbury, et al. Are you there, Mr. Collymore?
Present.
All right, we're going to mark that ready.
I'm here for the respondents as well, Mr. Chairman.
And you are Attorney?
Scapini.
Thank you, Attorney Scapini. We'll mark that ready as well. This matter is the one that's being taken out of order. It will be number three, docket number FIC 2021-0697, Aviva Stahl and Seth Weisler versus Commission, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Are you there, Aviva Stahl?
Yes, ready for the compliance.
Okay, and is Seth Weisler there?
Both.
Okay, and you are Attorney?
Attorney Schultz.
And Attorney Jennifer LaPorte for the Department of Correction.
Thank you. Mark that right. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0665, Terrence Burton versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
The respondent is present, but I understand the complainant gave word to the commission this morning that he would like to withdraw his complaint.
So, Mr. Chairman, I believe the hearing officer has an amendment that would reflect that, and you could probably dispose of that pretty quickly.
Okay. First, the record will reflect that it was Attorney LaPorte who spoke. Correct, Attorney LaPorte?
Correct.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Danielle McGee as the hearing officer. I was the hearing officer in this matter, and Attorney LaPorte is correct. This morning, we did receive a withdrawal from the complainant, so I would propose an amendment to the hearing officer's report. Following the first paragraph on page one, my proposal would be to add the following. On November 4th, 2022, the commission transmitted a proposed final decision in this matter dated November 2nd, 2022. However, by letter dated November 15, 2022, and received and filed by the commission on November 16, 2022, the complainant informed the commission that he wished to withdraw the complaint. The commission takes administrative notice of such withdrawal. And then the sentence that is in the HR in the packet before you, followed by paragraphs 1 through 45, would be removed. And then on page 8 of the HOR, my recommendation would be to remove the two orders under paragraph 1 and 2, of course, and in place there'd be one order which says, based upon the withdrawal, the complaint is dismissed.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we amend the hearing officer's report per the request of hearing officer McGee to enter the language in the second paragraph, remove paragraphs 1 through 45, and remove the two orders and replace them with the language as she mentioned.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fisashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. The amendment passes unanimously. I'd entertain a motion on the withdrawn matter.
No objection from Attorney LaPorte?
No objection.
Mr. Chairman, I move the amended hearing officer's report for adoption.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fisashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0531, Robert Clark Castell versus Town Manager, Town of Newington, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
The clerk is here. I'm here with him. We're not planning any oral argument or anything. We're just here for observation purposes.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else here on that matter? Great. I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, seeing that there's no objection from the complainant and the respondent is not here, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Thank you.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fisashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Next is FIC 2021-0275. Joan Zeigman versus Attorney General, State of Connecticut, Office of the Attorney General, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Attorney Robert Shea for the Office of the Attorney General responded.
Would you like to be heard?
If needed, Mr. Chairman.
If there's
I support the hearing officer.
So if there's no opposition, you'd like us to act on it?
Yes, please.
Okay. Is there anyone here on that matter? Is Joan Zeigman there, please? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is a dismissal. Not seeing the complainant here and no objection to the respondent, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fisashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, Attorney Shea. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0682, Jeremiah Stafford versus Chairman, Board of Education, Darien Public Schools, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Jeremiah Stafford?
Mr. Chairman, I do Attorney? Have an amendment on this
okay.
report, if I could
Attorney McGee?
Suggest that. Thank you. For the record, Danielle McGee is the hearing officer in this matter. Just a small amendment to paragraph 9. What I would suggest the commission amend in this paragraph is that the first sentence remain with respect to the language on that first line through the word page, but that there be a period placed there, and then the language that follows it provides which read through the end of that sentence be removed. I don't think it's necessary for the final decision. So that would be my suggestion to the commission.
Is there a motion on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we amend paragraph 9 per the request of the hearing officer.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded on the amendment. Is there discussion?
I have a question. Could you address why you're removing that phrase? You're suggesting removing it.
My suggestion is...
It puts in perspective what the issue is about.
It's a rather crass statement, quite frankly, and I don't think it's necessary for the decision. I don't think it, considering that our decisions are public They're available on our website. They're available to the public going forward. And I don't think that that language is necessarily determinative of the outcome. So I thought, just for discussion with the commission, that since it's not necessary for the decision, that we consider removing it.
Can I ask your follow-up question? Has that phrase already been in the public press and publicly available?
Well, it was posted on Facebook. Right. Both of the parties to the case put it in the record. The actual screenshot that reflects that language is a part of the administrative record. So yes, and it's in the proposed decision, so it's already been made public by virtue of the transmittal of that decision and public record that underlies the decision.
So as you have highest respect for your work and judgment, but I'm going to vote against deleting this.
Is there any other discussion regarding the amendment? Okay. I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the amendment. Commissioner Einhorn?
No.
Mr. Fusashi?
No.
Mr. Hankins?
No.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, no. So the amendment fails. So is there any further discussion on this decision? If not, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, as we discussed, it was a dismissal. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the decision. Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fusashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number. Thank you, Attorney McGee.
Thank you.
Next is docket number FIC 2021-0683, Greg Smith and the Day versus the Mayor, City of New London, and City of New London. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Brian Eastick, Attorney Brian Eastick, on behalf of the City of New London.
Anyone here on behalf of the Day?
I did speak to Greg Smith this morning. He said he did not intend to be present today.
Okay. Thank you. Greg Smith? All right. I'd entertain a motion.
Attorney Eastick, did you wish to be heard on this matter?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Oh, you do wish to be heard. I'm sorry.
That's what I thought.
I'm sorry, I'm not
even
clear on that.
Thank you.
I'm going to abstain on this matter, Mr. Chairman, when it comes up.
Okay, one abstention. Yeah, you might just remind us. Okay. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0686, Daniel Riles, Michael Merrily, and Alexander T. Tobbs versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, and State of Connecticut. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, sir. This is Michael Merrily, paralegal for Attorney Alex Tobbs.
So your name again?
Michael Merrily, paralegal for Attorney Alex Tobbs.
Okay.
Good afternoon,
State
Department of Correction.
And I'm Daniel Robb, which is about this case.
Okay. Would you like that marked ready?
Mm-hmm.
Would you all like that marked ready?
Yes, please.
All right. We'll mark that ready. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0689, Joseph Sargent and members, Parks and Recreation Commission, Town of Fairfield et al. Is Joseph Sargent here? Is there anyone here from the town of Fairfield?
Mr. Chairman, I have a proposed amendment.
Okay.
If I may. Felicia Harmon, I was the hearing officer in this case.
Thank you.
So turning to the orders 1-3 on page 5 of the decision, I'd like to strike the order that's in the, it's really just a rewrite of, it's a little bit better language. So for the second order, I'm going to strike the language, recommend that we strike the language that's there and replace it with the following. With regard to paragraph 13 of the findings above, the respondent shall contact the complainant to ascertain which email attachments the complainant was unable to open. Upon receipt of said information from the complainant, including the identity of the sender and the recipient of the email and the date and time when the email was sent and or received, the respondent shall forthwith locate and provide copies of such attachments to the complainant free of charge. So I'd like that. It just reads better. So I'm recommending that we just replace what's there with what I just read. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we replace the language in the second order for the language that was proposed by the hearing officer.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the amendment. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Kazeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Amendment passes unanimously. Is there any further discussion on this as amended? This decision is amended?
Mr. Chairman, seeing no one's here, I move adoption of the amended hearing officer.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the matter as amended. Decision is amended. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. All right. Thank you, Jeremy Harmon.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. Next one is packet number FIC 2021-0704, Nwoku Yasayasi versus President, State of Connecticut, University of Connecticut, et al. Is anyone here on that matter? What's your name, sir? Mr. Gassesi. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Brittany Killian on behalf of the department.
Okay. Would you like to be heard?
Yes.
Okay. All right, I'll mark that ready. Thank you. All right, next is docket number FIC 2022-0046, Kent Johnson versus Chief Police Department, City of Torrington, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Okay. Do you wish to be heard on that?
Yes, please.
Okay, sure.
I would propose an amendment, and neither party is intended to appear, I believe, today.
Just identify yourself.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Attorney Jennifer Miller.
Thank you, Attorney Miller.
And then would just be on to paragraph 16, adding in a clause, so it would read as follows. It is further found the entire manual, comma, except the records identified in paragraph 18, comma, is responsive to the complainant's request. That's just for clarity, because in paragraph 18, there's notation that there are some records that were not responsive to his request.
Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move we amend paragraph 16 with the language presented by the hearing officer.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? All in favor of the amendment, please respond when I call your name. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously.
Mr. Chairman, seeing no one here, I move adoption of the amended hearing officer's report.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the decision as amended. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Attorney Miller. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0165, Robert Hagar versus Chief Police Department, City of Groton, et al. Is there anyone here on this matter? This matter was withdrawn. I didn't entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As you mentioned, it was withdrawn and dismissed. Seeing no one present, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Okay.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0174, Holly Nugent versus Chief Police Department, Town of Guilford, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yeah, Mark Samaruga for the complainant.
You wish to be heard, counsel?
Yes, please.
Is there anyone here for the defendant?
Yes, Karen Baldwin Kravitz for the respondent.
Thank you, counsel. All right, we'll mark that ready. All right. And then last, this matter been marked off, PRVR number 4, City of Stamford versus Matthew J. Olson. Has this been marked
yes,
over?
Yes, at the request of the respondent, Mr. Olson. has been marked off, and it will be the subject of a special meeting in the near future.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So before we consider the cases, I will ask the Executive Director, Colleen Murphy, to please make the usual announcement.
Sure. For everyone in attendance today, as you heard, the meeting is being recorded in its entirety, so there's no need to ask for a recording. And if you would like access to that, you can check our website. Soon after the meeting, it should be available. If you have any issues, just let us know. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral arguments, 10 minutes per side, and I'll keep track of that for the parties.
Very good. All right, so I'll call the first number, docket number FIC 2020-0528, Earl Bradley versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Are you there, Mr. Bradley?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, and Attorney Brown is here as well.
Thank you.
Attorney Brown, would you like to begin? Is there just dismissed? So,
Earl Bradley.
Mr. Bradley, would you like to begin, please?
Yes. The record will show that the respondent has challenged a number of times the FOI Commission's jurisdiction and power on a number of issues. The petitioner recognizes that the sought video preservation number and incident report do not exist, and this commission is powerless to compel its production. Respondent claims your commission does not have jurisdiction regarding what, capital letters, should exist. At the hearing, Respondent Campanelli denied under oath that the sought-after material should not exist. He under oath verified that the material should not exist. And when questioned further, other forms as well should not exist. Now, whether the hearing officer should have asked whether or not certain items should exist is now besides the point, because the fact is he responded to it. The commission should have as its own interest to guide its decision the importance of truthfulness at the hearings. Without a demand for truthfulness, the hearings would be a sham. So today's committee decision largely has to do with the interest of the Freedom of Information Commission in view of the totality of the circumstances where the respondent with impunity just brushed off the Freedom of Information Commission. Question is perjury to be tolerated by the commission? The video preservation and incident report should exist from two perspectives. One, from the complainants, that the respondent said that he didn't properly make the request. And that aside, which I believe I did make the request properly, that aside, that doesn't account for the other perspective, which is from the DOC's perspective, that the administrative directive states that from the DOC's perspective, video preservation should exist as well as an incident report. And at the hearing, it was said that there was no incident, and that's why there is no longer existence of a video. But that is not true, because if there were no incident, it would have been so documented on another form by the person responsible for reviewing it, a supervisor. The whole question comes down to what the administrative directive actually says, which I believe I sent a copy of the synopsis. And if the respondent can just quote the administrative directive inaccurately as supporting him when it in fact disputes what he's saying, I believe it needs an investigation. Again, for the commission's interest, but by policy, the ones that are responsible to do their freedom of information responsibility cannot just, as a matter of policy, just come in, say what they want, limit the commission's jurisdiction and powers, and then just go out unscathed. So from the DOC's perspective, and by administrative directive, something should exist, for sure. Now, the respondent says that the Freedom of Information has no jurisdiction over what should exist. But what I'm saying is the Freedom of Information should at least demand truthfulness at the hearing. And again, certain questions perhaps should not have been asked by the officer, but they were asked. And the fact that they were asked demands that they be answered correctly, or refused to answer, but they were answered with perjurious answers. The question today is whether the commission will tolerate perjury. What is easily determined by the record is that the petitioner requested material was assigned an ombudsman, Attorney Harmon, and did not, under Freedom of Information guidelines, receive a timely response. And that response could have been simply that the items didn't exist, but it took years. Now, for a guideline of what's reasonable, the Freedom of Information Commission itself has a policy of 30 days or then a complaint must be filed within 30 days. So if nothing else, the DOC did not timely answer my response, or again, the ombudsman, simply it doesn't exist. And if you look at the totality of the circumstances, the whole mess doesn't pass the smell test. And it's absolutely a fact that I didn't find out that there was no video until the hearing. And that's absolutely absurd. And when you consider how incriminating the evidence would have been had it been produced, it's very logical that the DOC had big motive to destroy it. And the other thing I wanted to protest was the sophistry involved, where video preservation and video preservation number were treated as separate and therefore discriminated, and not maybe one canceling out the other, but when in fact they are treated synonymously. A request for video preservation is taken by the DOC to mean video preservation number, but the hearing officer seemed to make a big deal out of something that there was no constructive difference whatsoever. Let's see. Again, I know I can't get something that doesn't exist, the video and the incident report. And I did put in a request for other documents which also were not sent, so there's a new complaint pending. But I believe that this deserves an ad hoc committee because I'm sure prisoner complaints come up frequently, to just reconcile what was transpired with the actual DOC administrative directives, which were quoted, which in fact go against the respondent's argument and actually support mine. And again, I want to mention that I can't get the video or the incident report, but I believe after years of waiting for a response that they did violate freedom of information responsibility to notify me within 30 days that such material did not exist. And again, everything I'm saying today is only a preview of what the entire record will show, the absurdity of what has happened. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Attorney Brown?
Yes, good afternoon. Tracy Brown for the Department of Correction. I don't believe I need to educate this commission on its jurisdiction, but I will say for the record that it is limited. And in this particular case, there are no records that are responsive to the complainant's request. It's unrefuted testimony to that extent. The complainant has said so himself today that he understands that the records don't exist. And I believe that that ends the question. There are no records to provide him. They were gone before he made his request. So, and in fact, some of them didn't even exist, specifically the incident reports. They never existed. There was no incident report ever created. And by the time he made his request for the video had been expunged pursuant to the department's policy and its rotation of its video of ordinary surveillance. So with that, we urge the commission to adopt the hearing officer's report as written.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the commissioners? All right, I entertain a motion then.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Langhorne?
Yes.
Commissioner Fisaschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Bradley. Thank you, Attorney Brown.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0624, Anthony Collymore versus Chief Police Department, City of Waterbury, et al. Mr. Collymore, are you there?
Yes, present.
Okay, 1 second. And then Attorney Scapini is also here. So, Mr. Collymore, would you like to begin, please?
Yes, sir, Chairman Egan. I would like to just start off by saying we went to, after hearing, Sergeant Kerouac testified that there were no responsive documents to my request for specifically certain sketches of the crime scene. The respondent's position is that these sketches do not exist, which is false. I testified at the hearing that I had that the Waterbury Police Department made they compiled an eight page composite sketch of the crime scene at issue. I further testified that I had three of the eight sketches. So for the Sergeant Kerouac to testify that these sketches don't exist is false. Second to that, to further the point, As a part of my FOI request, the Waterbury Police Department turned over a 5-page Waterbury Police Department supplementary report. And I had entered this 5-page supplementary report as an exhibit at the hearing. And I pointed out a few paragraphs within that supplementary report, and specifically on, I think it was page 3 of the Waterbury supplementary report that the respondents turned over to me as part of this FOI request, it specifically says that this sketch was created. So here you have the Woodbury Police Department turning over a 5-page supplementary report that documents that in quotes that a sketch was created of the crime scene at issue. Then you have my testimony that I actually possess 3 pages of the eight-page composite sketch of the crime scene. But at the same, in the same breath, you have the sergeant's testimony that these sketches, they don't exist. So the evidence shows, the record should show that these sketches, they do exist. Why they're not being turned over, I can't answer that question. But I don't think the respondents have satisfied their duty under FOI. And I'm just asking the commission to do whatever it can to ensure that my rights under the Freedom of Information Act are protected in this matter. Respectfully, thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Scapini.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What Mr. Collinwar has left out is the fact that none of these so-called sketches were entered into evidence. We never saw what he claims are sketches. He also testified under oath, just in testimony only, that whatever he had in his possession, he got them from his lawyer who obtained them from the court, not from the Waterbury Police Department. And at the hearing on August 11th, Hearing Officer Perlman went into extensive detail with testimony, exhibits, and arguments on these very same allegations and found no merit to them. As a matter of fact, Hearing Officer Perlman's decision clearly states that there is no violation of the Freedom of Information Act, that all responsive records that the Waterbury Police Department maintained or possessed were released to the requester, and they were done prompt, and it was done in a prompt manner. This is the result of a very thorough and extensive hearing, and I certainly would ask that the commission adopt the hearing officer's recommended order of dismissal of this complaint.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
I just have a comment. I mean, I had a couple of questions about the sketches, but actually Attorney Scapini answered them during his statement, so I have no questions at all. Thank you.
Is Attorney Perlman here?
Good afternoon.
Hey, Attorney Perlman, how are you? Were there any questions about these sketches to the officer?
Yes, there are questions regarding the sketches and the reports that he was looking for. And the testimony was that the sergeant had conducted a search of the various divisions that I've outlined in finding 12, and also that their testimony wasn't that they didn't exist, but that they did not, that the department did not maintain the records. So it wasn't, they didn't know whether they existed or not, there was, but that they themselves were not maintaining those records.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Commissioners? All right. Mr. Collinwar, did you want to say something?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just heard Ms. Perlman, who I believe was the hearing officer for the hearing in question, and I would disagree with what Ms. Perlman said, and this is what I disagree with. Ms. Perlman said, just said to the commission that the testimony at the hearing was that not the testimony wasn't that they don't have, that the records don't exist, that the records, that wasn't the testimony. I disagree with that because Sergeant Kerouac of the Waterbury Police Department testified at that hearing that he specifically spoke with the author of these sketches, whose name at the time was Julio. I think she may have changed her last name. I believe she doesn't know. She doesn't any longer work for the Waterbury Police Department. But at the time, she did work for the Waterbury Police Department as a crime scene technician. Her last name was De Virgilio. And Sergeant Kerouac testified that he spoke with her directly, and she said there was never any sketches. He specifically testified at that hearing that there were no sketches. These sketches didn't exist. Attorney Scopini objected to me testifying that I had in my possession 3 of the 8 composite sketches. The fact of the matter is the sketches do exist. Yes, I didn't submit the 3 sketches that I have in my possession as evidence, but my testimony is relevant. And the Waterbury Police Department, again, the Waterbury Police Department turned over, as part of the FOI request, documentation, a supplementary report where they agree that the sketches exist in this supplementary report. Now, now in front of the commission, the story is that, well, we're not saying that they don't exist, but we're just saying that we didn't maintain them. That is not what was said at the hearing. At the hearing, it was that these sketches, that they don't exist. And I say that that testimony was false. And if the hearing was recorded, it can be easily re-listened to. And I'm saying that the Waterbury Park Department's position through Sergeant Kerouac was that this composite sketch, this 8-page composite sketch, that it didn't exist. And I'm saying that it does, and I can prove it does, and I testify that it does. And for whatever reason, they didn't turn them over. And that's the question that needs to be answered. Why didn't they turn them over?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
May I respond, Mr.
Yes,
Chairman?
Sir.
Mr. Collin, thank you. Mr. Collin was mischaracterizing the testimony. I'd like to emphasize what Hearing Officer Perlman has said, that the testimony from Sergeant Kerouac was that he went above and beyond what would be expected as a reasonable record review. He contacted every office, every department, all of the crime scene technicians that were mentioned, especially crime scene technician Virgilio. And his testimony was that she claimed she did not create any sketches. That was the extent of her testimony. But it still remains that the obligation on the part of the Waterbury Police Department was completely performed and complied with. And there were no responsive records that were not turned over. I know that's a double negative, but all responsive records were provided, and that there were no such sketches in the possession or maintenance of the Waterbury Police Department. To go beyond that would be to expand FOIA beyond what it's intended to accomplish. So I would ask that the commission consider adopting the hearing officer's recommendation.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any comments or questions? With that, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuzashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Collingmore. Thank you, Attorney Scafino.
Thank you, Chairman. I asked the Chairman on a procedural matter. There is another matter on the docket today that is non-arguable. However, I don't know whether I should remain in attendance. And it's docket number 2021-0705, Julio Burgos Torres.
Number three on the agenda, after the docket, Mr. Chair.
No oral argument is permitted anyway.
Yeah.
Right, there's no oral argument. I just wanted to make sure that I'm here in interest regarding the recommendation by the executive director.
Mm-hmm. You're asking us whether you should stay or not. It's up to you.
I just want to know if you would like me to stay, if there's any questions or anything that you would need from me.
No, we won't be taking any testimony once someone.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Say otherwise. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. So we're going to take this matter next. It's docket number FIC 2021-0697, Aviva Thal and Seth Kressler versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Corrections, et al. Everyone identify themselves for the record, sir.
Good afternoon. I'm Attorney Schultz for the complainants, and with me is law student Noreen Akhwari. We have made a motion on consent for her to represent the complainants in this proceeding.
What's her name?
Noreen Akhwari, D-O-R-R-I-N. Last name is A-K-B-A-R-I.
Thank you. Counsel.
Attorney Jennifer LaFore, and with me I have the respondent, a representative for the respondent, Counselor Supervisor Anthony Campanelli.
Thank you, Mr. Campanelli. Thank you, Attorney LaFore.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I was the hearing officer in this matter. Yes. I have a proposed amendment. The amendment previously was sent to the commissioners, and it was also sent to the parties. I have extra copies if you'd like them.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Attorney.
Oh, you can get two.
He wants to read it again.
I know.
I hear. I got Chris coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we need a motion for admission of Ms. Bari? I know there was error.
It was filed. I don't think any.
It was filed. It was mailed to us. But I just welcome the Yale Media Freedom of Information Access Clinic's participation. You may regret it, but. It's a very important part of good argument in advancing law here in Connecticut. So thank you. We also, of course, look forward to your participation.
Mr. Chairman, the amendment was prompted by a motion to reconsider that was filed by the DOC after the hearing officer's report was issued. And effectively, they were sort of basically asking the hearing officer to reopen the hearing to submit additional evidence regarding one of the exemptions that they claimed. And in reviewing the report, I felt that it was an issue that didn't need to be addressed anyway because the medical records were found to be exempt under a different exemption. So in response to that motion, I just wanted to give a little credit to Kevin Munn, our new staff attorney, who, as you all know, I've been out of the office for a bit, really helped me with doing a lot of the research and some of the writing on this. So this was what we came up with, to just eliminate finding that they didn't prove that the records were exempt under those federal regulations and then just kind of renumber the paragraphs. So that's what the amendment does.
Thank you. We entertain a motion on the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I will make a motion that we amend the hearing officer's report per the request as stated in the sheet that was presented to us by the hearing officer.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fusashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. So the amendment passes unanimously. All right. So we're back on the matter as amended. So would Ms. LaFore like to begin?
Sure. So the respondents and the complainants in this matter have very thoroughly briefed. I believe there may have been four in total, if not more. So I don't want to waste the commission's time by just rehashing everything that was in the brief. But I can give you some high-level points that the respondents have made and continue to make today. So there's really two main issues in this case, the first being incident reports and whether or not they are preliminary drafts under 1-210B1 and 1-210E1. The respondents maintain that the incident report is part of the Security Division investigation, and it's an integral part, a foundational part, an inseparable part.
And it, the security division investigation continues to be subject to review and discussion. Until the security division investigation is closed, the respondents maintain that the incident report remains in draft form. As to the balancing test that 1-210B1 requires, Counselor Supervisor Campanelli provided testimony on that issue, and it boils down to providing the public, both inmate and staff and general public population, with the complete picture of what actually occurred, rather than a narrower scope, which may be incomplete or false upon further investigation by our security division. So the respondents contend that the incident reports remain in draft form and therefore need not be disclosed until the security division investigation is completed. One thing I will note is that the request here was made for incident reports regarding inmate deaths. Every single inmate death is investigated by the security division investigation, as has been testified to in this matter. So this is a special category of incidents that occur for DOC, because not every incident is investigated by our security division, but every death is. And moving on to the medical records piece of this, the medical records of the individuals identified in those incident reports were also requested. And the complainants stated that they would accept the de-identified medical records of the individuals in the incident reports. The respondents maintain that under Connecticut medical privacy statutes, that the amount of information that has been disclosed already in the hearing, the amount of information that the complainants have, I believe they have the names, they have the birth dates, dates of death, facilities where the inmates were located, gender, race, admission date, cause of death, details surrounding the death, the security division investigation number, and during the hearing, evidence was put in, I believe, regarding the office of the chief medical examiner, and records were obtained from there as well. So there's a lot of outside knowledge that's being brought to the table here, and 52-146D and E both require us to take into account what the individual who's requesting these records knows. There is a case currently pending on appeal to the Supreme Court. It is the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services versus the Freedom of Information Commission. And the respondents contend in its supplemental brief that that should not be relied upon here. And I get into the reasons in that brief. I'm happy to reiterate those today if the commission needs further detail. But the respondents would urge adoption of the hearing officer's report, specifically the paragraphs that were previously, I didn't renumber them, I apologize, previously identified as 43 through 65, and the second order and the third order. The respondents agree with those portions of the hearing officer's report. And I welcome any questions that the commission may have.
Thank you, Attorney. Counsel.
Good afternoon. My name is Garnet Bari, and I'm here on behalf of the complainants of Eva Stahl and Seth Wessler. 281 inmates died under the Department of Corrections supervision in the less than 3 years spanning January 2019 and September 2021. Our clients are investigative journalists who filed their FOIA requests to understand why. As discussed, at issue here are two types of records: incident reports documenting inmates' deaths, and health and medical records showing the care they received while alive. The department has completely denied the public access to this information on independent grounds. For the incident reports, it cited the preliminary drafts exemption, and for the health and medical records, it cited two principal privileges, the psychiatrist-patient and the physician-patient privilege. There was no partial production of these records, no redactions. The department produced nothing. In her October 31st order, hearing officer Ross found, for various reasons, that the incident reports were not preliminary drafts. I think it's also important to lay out what is at issue here with respect to the incident reports. After the hearing, it was found that 180 of the 281 requested incident reports were actually closed. And for an additional 46 of those incident reports, there was no evidence of an Associated Security Division investigation. So what's really at issue is 55 incident reports. And with respect to those reports, hearing officer Ross found that they would be subject to the carve-out under Section 210E1, in that they must be disclosed if they precede a final decision not yet made, but will not themselves be revised later. As Mr. Campanelli testified, the reports themselves are not revised. They are supposed to be records of the facts that occurred at the time of the incident, and thus any changes that are made are an occasional supplement that occurs, so additions that are made to the total factual record. And those supplements are generally made within days of those reports being produced. We're talking about reports that were produced in 2019 to 2021. There's no reason to believe that they would be revised. And also, there's no reason to believe they would fall under the exemption because they are factual in nature. They are documenting the incident itself, what occurred, who was there. So regardless of whether or not those 55 investigations were subject to the Security Division investigation, they would fall within the carve-out of 210E1. This leaves the medical records, for which there are two issues before the Commission. First, whether the privileges law for disclosure of de-identified records. And second, whether given the facts of this case, de-identification is possible. First, the privileges allow for disclosure of de-identified records. Hearing Officer Ross rightly found the psychiatrist patient privilege allows for de-identification. The statute's plain language and underlying policy support this conclusion. As to the language, the statute states that no person may disclose or transmit any records which identify a patient to any person. Thus, the text explicitly provides that de-identified records are not privileged, as does the underlying policy of incentivizing patients to make full and frank disclosures to their psychiatrists, free from the invasion of privacy or stigma that would result from their testimony. Stripped of identifying information in the manner contemplated by the statute, de-identified records in no way implicate those risks. Records that don't refer to a patient can't stigmatize them. While the hearing officer correctly recognized this path for de-identification, she incorrectly concluded that the other privileges do not allow for it. Her conclusion rested only on the statute's silence on the issue, but the statutes say nothing to rule out de-identification, and there's every reason to think it is permissible. I'll lay out four of those reasons here, focusing on the physician-patient privilege. First, the only Connecticut case to address this issue held that the physician-patient privilege does not apply to de-identified records. The case is unambiguous on this point, and hearing officer Ross gave no reason to depart from it. Second, de-identification is consistent with the purpose of the physician-patient privilege, which is identical to that of the psychiatrist-patient privilege. Because records stripped of identifying information pose no risk of an invasion of privacy or stigma, releasing de-identified records falls outside of the privilege's scope. And there's no reason to treat the privileges differently. Third, if one construed the privilege so broadly that it applied regardless of identifying information, then every scrap of paper on which a doctor wrote indigestion, diagnosis, or aspirin, a treatment, would fall under the privilege. And the legislature couldn't have possibly intended such absurd results. And lastly, other state courts have found the same. Several states, including those with statutory language that, like Connecticut's, is silent on de-identification, have concluded that their physician-patient privileges do not prevent the release of de-identified medical records. Examples include Utah, Arizona, and Colorado. These courts recognize the common sense idea that records can't stigmatize a person that they don't identify. There's therefore overwhelming authority both within and outside of this jurisdiction, allowing for de-identification under all relevant privileges. Which brings me to the second issue, whether de-identification is possible on the facts of this case. The hearing officer and the department have offered conclusory statements that it's not because of the information already in our client's possession, but that information is extremely limited. The information we have about the 281 deceased inmates fits onto the three pages admitted as complainants Exhibit 5. This information consists of the following basic categories: inmate number, name, date of birth, race, gender, date of admission, time and manner of birth and death, and cause and manner of death. Redaction here would be straightforward. These categories are simple and discrete, and in many cases, the department wouldn't even need to redact all categories. For over 100 inmates, the spreadsheet doesn't even specify the cause and manner of death. Neither the hearing officer nor the department articulated any reason why these redactions would not effectively de-identify the records. And to find otherwise defies logic. Complainants can't tie medical records to inmates listed on the spreadsheet if there's no information linking the two. Thus, de-identification is both permissible and possible in this case. We respectfully request that the commission adopt the hearing officer's order to disclose the incident reports and reject her conclusion that de-identification of the medical records is not possible in this case. It plainly is under all relevant privileges. De-identified health and medical records should be produced.
Thank you. Do you wish to respond?
Yes,
Just to clarify, I don't believe it's accurate to say that the DOC completely denied the request. As to the incident reports, we have stated we will provide them upon closure of the security division investigations. And for the medical records, we have asked repeatedly whether the complainants have sought consent from the families of the deceased, and the answer has been no each time. We have not gotten any consents. We don't have any communication from the families saying that they would be okay with the release of this information. We would be happy to provide unredacted versions of the medical records if they can provide a consent from the deceased family. Furthermore, in counsel's discussion, there was not talk of the definition of what it means to be identifiable, and that is provided in 52.146D, and it says, to identify a patient or to be identifiable refers to the names or other descriptive data from which a person acquainted with the patient might reasonably recognize the patient as the person referred to. Here, the hearing officer heard all of the testimony, reviewed all of the exhibits, read the briefs, and we submitted a representative sample in camera of these medical records. One grouping of medical records was about 6,000 pages. The other one was about 300. And the hearing officer made this determination based on her review of those records in part, as she provides in her hearing officer's report, that these records would be identifiable based on what is present. Furthermore, the incident reports, if disclosed pursuant to the order as suggested in the hearing officer's report, would provide more information as to the circumstances surrounding this individual, not just their death, but where they were located, what cell they were in, things of that nature, and more information about the person individually. And that could lead to the identification of the records. I am not suggesting that the complainants are going to sit there with a spreadsheet and try to compare. But that's not necessarily what the statute contemplates. I need to make sure that these records could not be identified. I need to follow what is in the statute, and I believe that these records could be identified based on everything else that has already been produced to the complainants and would be produced to the complainants.
Anything further to say?
Yes, happy to respond briefly. So first, with respect to the conclusions that were held by the hearing officer, it's important to kind of note that that was exactly what they were. They were conclusions, but there wasn't any additional reasoning provided for why de-identification is not possible. And absent that reasoning, the conclusion doesn't make sense. We can't possibly match these very basic identifying bits of information, name, date of birth. This is all information that the commission would be redacting in the first place in order to de-identify as contemplated by the statute. And if you aren't able to disclose de-identified records, then we wouldn't be able to have oversight into these types of medical care that is provided to inmates. Oversight that's especially important in this case, where Connecticut has been recognized to have a fundamental healthcare crisis when it comes to the care of inmates. And de-identification of medical records is done all the time. I find it difficult to fathom why this particular case would be unique and why among the thousands of pages that are reviewed, not one page could possibly be de-identified and disclosed. It's important to recognize that under FOIA, the department has an obligation to review these records on a case-by-case basis and try to disclose as much information as possible. And given one medical record potentially was not capable of being completely redacted and de-identified, it's difficult to fathom how all 281 records would be able to reach that same conclusion absent review. Second, with respect to the additional information that would come from the incident reports, again, it's important to note that the hearing officer nor the department did not contemplate that information in making their rejection of the production. Additionally, the incident reports document the inmates' deaths, while the medical records covered their care, so we have little reason to believe that there would be much factual overlap. And even if there was, that's a question of how much there should be redaction done, and not whether or not a complete withholding is permissible. The department has a burden to do these redactions and to produce as many records as possible. It has not met its burden, and indeed the hearing officer found that many of the medical records were administrative in nature and needed to be produced, which points to the fact that the department did not perform the case-by-case analysis that it was obligated to do so, and it did not attempt to disclose as much information as it possibly could. The legislature has recognized that there is a healthcare crisis in the prisons of Connecticut. It is important that these records, to the extent that they are possible, be de-identified and disclosed so that the public can have the oversight into these practices that FOIA demands. Thank you. Do you have any specific questions, Mr. Chairman?
Well, do you want to comment on the arguments?
Sure. Just with regard to the issue of de-identifying the records, the court decision that the complainants point to, I just want to point out for the commissioners, that's not an FOI case. That case was decided by the Superior Court in the context of a discovery dispute. And indeed, all of the cases that court cites to in other jurisdictions arose out of discovery disputes in which these medical records would be able to be viewed by the parties, but they would be viewed in camera or they'd be reviewed under, or they would be reviewed under seal. They'd be sealed so that the parties only could look at them. This is very different from ordering disclosure of medical records under the FOI Act. And I think that, the other thing that kind of Kevin and I kept going back to, it seems unfair that with medical records, which people think generally of being very private, to order disclosure of the records of these individuals who have no choice but to receive their medical care through the state or through a public agency, just doesn't seem right. The other issue with respect to de-identification, I think it is important to keep in mind what the standard is for de-identification, and that is something that's identifiable is a record that contains the names or other descriptive data from which a person acquainted with the patient might reasonably recognize the patient as the person referred to. If you think about that in real terms, if I were to, Mr. Chairman, if I were to give your medical records to your wife, I think that she'd probably, even if they were de-identified, she'd be able to recognize you as that person. So right there, it's a pretty obvious and weird example, but I think that it highlights the standard that we have to look at when we're looking at de-identification. The other point that was made by the complainant with regard to the de-identification of records in the statute. It is true that the psychiatric privilege is the only one of many of these similar privileges that specifically carves out or makes provision for disclosure of de-identified records. And I think in our state, under the plain language statute or 1-2Z, I think it's very telling that the legislature did not see fit to carve that out in any of these other privileges. It's not in the doctor-patient privilege. It's not in the social worker privilege. It's not in any other kind of privilege. It's only under the psychiatric privilege. That's weird. But we have to presume that the legislature intended to do that. I don't think we can just say, well, because they didn't say it in these other cases, that means that they could be disclosed if they're de-identified. I think that's the inverse or the opposite of what the law is. So let's see. Anything else? Anything else that I can address or any questions?
Any questions?
One quick question. The de-identification, what statute is the de-identification for psychiatric requisite.
It's in the psychiatric privilege statute.
It's not in the FOI statute.
No.
So it's not governing, it's just information.
So the way that the FOI Act, that's a great question. The way the privileges get looped into the FOI Act is under 1-210B10. That's the same statute that we cite all the time for the attorney-client privilege, because the full language of that statute makes records that are subject to any of those privileges, attorney-client, doctor-patient, psychiatric, marital, exempt from disclosure. So it's really under 1-210B10. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. So, Attorney Ross, they're looking for records in a large scope, and you mentioned about being acquainted. I mean, when you're looking at something that's a huge aggregate, where the chances of finding out who the person actually is remote. I mean, the information, I just wonder why I know you were saying it's not in the statute for de-identification of medical records, but it also seems a little bit of a stretch that anybody would be able to figure out. You made the case for, you know, the chairman's wife. I mean, if they're looking at these large groups, you said there's 6,000 records, how they would be able to find out who the individual is. I mean, I think this is something that probably should go to the legislature or be appealed, because I think these records should be able to be released with some sort of de-identification, even though it's not set in our statute right now.
So I think that you raise a good point, and I should have said this initially. I did look at the in-camera records, and it really was the conclusion that's in the HOR is really based on my review of the records themselves. I mean, these are medical records, in some cases going back years by this person. And what I kept thinking was, and I've never been in prison, thank God, but if I were a security guard, for example, if I was in one of these facilities, I'm guessing from just what I've learned through working at, as a hearing officer here, there's a lot of information that the inmates know about each other. So I suspect that you're trying to think of hypotheticals, how could the person be identified? I bet you a lot of the other inmates know, you know, that this guy did this or this guy did that. This guy has this medical condition. So I think in combination, disclosing those records, even de-identified, in combination with the other information that the DOC has already disclosed, and based on my review of the in-camera records, my conclusion was that that standard, that really high standard, couldn't be met. That a reasonable, that someone acquainted with the patient might reasonably recognize the patient. And that's what I kept going back to, that standard. That's what we have to go by.
I just think there's also a public interest for the information. If there is an issue with and it should be probably focused on the state legislature to figure this out.
Yeah, because, I agree. There's a public interest. And
I just on the other issue, I have no question that the incident reports are. I totally agree with where you're coming from that. So I don't think there's any carve out for that. But I appreciate you answering those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions?
I just want, all these reports are about prisoners who are deceased, is that correct?
The incident reports?
No, the ones that would be
the medical records?
Exactly.
Yes.
And did you look about whether these, in the review of these reports, I'm getting confusing a little bit about how carefully these reports were reviewed, but are you asserting that there's information about relatives in there, or just that the relatives might recognize who this
is? I was just trying to put it in real.
To me, that's a difference, whether a relative might recognize that that may have been my son who's deceased, or whether it's information about the relatives.
I was using the example
living
of the chairman's wife just to try to drive home the language of that de-identification statute. It's such an easy thing to meet. Right, so it has nothing to do with relatives. I'm sorry if that was confusing. The statute says if the names or other descriptive data from which a person acquainted with the person with the patient, might reasonably recognize the patient.
The patient.
So maybe that's not a good example. So let's just take a security guard that works at the DOC who is acquainted with the inmate, I would think. From what I reviewed, what I looked at, it seemed to me that even if those medical records were redacted or de-identified, that security guard would know who that patient was.
Know or guess who that patient was.
Well, the language of the statute is might reasonably recognize the patient. Might reasonably recognize the patient.
Well, have you mentioned there's a case pending that might be relevant here at the Supreme Court? Is that related to de-identification?
Yes. So that case is Demas versus the Freedom of Information Commission, and it is currently pending before the Connecticut Supreme Court. I can provide further information, I think.
How is that relevant, or just in brief?
Yeah, no, the complainants put that case forward to support their position that the records could be de-identified in accordance.
What is your analysis of that?
My analysis, as I put forward in my brief, is that that's not applicable here. So in that case, the request was for Demas records. They were police incident reports sought by the Hartford Courant. And they were all reports on deaths in 2016 of whiting patients that were deemed accidental. And the Superior Court stated that the records could be de-identified and then disclosed. But my argument is that the court did not consider or examine the phrase that Attorney Ross keeps pointing out, which is person acquainted with the patient. They didn't take into consideration that portion of the definition of something to be identifiable. And then the Superior Court, without considering that, determined that the definition only focuses on the record itself. And if you took that language out, yeah, it would only focus on the record itself. But the legislator specifically included that language in there, and we cannot ignore it if the legislature put it in there. And then without considering the knowledge of the requester, the court concluded that the records could be redacted so that they would not identify the subject. However, the spirit of the law, and I think Attorney Ross was getting at this a little bit, is to keep medical and psychiatric records confidential. And the production of a record to an individual or to an entity that would understand to whom the record might refer is directly contrary to that law. Looking at the legislative history of the medical privacy statutes, you will see senators testifying, representatives testifying, that it is of the utmost importance that our medical records be kept secure and confidential. And as I pointed out in, I can't remember which brief it was, but one of them, that inmates are forced to receive their medical care from the state, right? They don't have the opportunity like we do to go out and see whatever specialist we may want to see. They have to receive their care by the state of Connecticut. And by virtue of that, those records could be deemed to be public records. They don't have a choice in the matter. And I do agree with Hearing Officer Ross that that does seem fundamentally unfair, that their records would then be subject simply because they had to receive care by the state of Connecticut. And I'm happy to go on about the case, Commissioner Fusashi, if you...
Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Attorney Ross, could you read that language again, reasonably acquainted? Please.
Yes, and this, for your reference, this is in paragraph 46 of the HOR. It says that this is part of the psychiatric patient privilege, identifiable and identify a patient, refer to communications and records which contain A, names or other descriptive data from which a person acquainted with the patient might reasonably recognize the patient as the person referred to.
So if a corrections officer knew Mr. Smith, hypothetically Mr. Smith, had a broken arm in October of 2019, the broken arm would come up in the medical report.
Mm-hmm.
If this patient had a broken arm, broken right arm, he might be able to identify Mr. Smith and then know more about Mr. Smith's medical background.
Yep, that's a great example. Or, you know, an inmate that tries to commit suicide. That's going to be in the medical records. And I think every inmate in that facility knows about that suicide attempt. Or somebody who's a schizophrenic, you know, they act kind of strange. People can see that. Other inmates can see that. The guards can see that. So I think, again, you have to go back to that, the language of that statute.
Thank you. Any other questions? With that, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the amended hearing officer.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Buzeschi?
Yes, but I hope that this issue will get further attention because it's two such important policy considerations, either from the legislature or the courts. But it's under the current, our current authority, when I hear, I vote yes for the hearing.
Yes. Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. But I want to say that both sides did an excellent job arguing. Thank you very much for bringing our attention to this issue.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, the hearing officer going through all
the hearing officer going through 6,000 documents. Absolutely. Thank you. FIC 2021-0683, Greg Smith and the day, and it's A versus Mayor City of New London et al.
So on this one, Mr. Chairman, just to orient the commission a little bit, you might recall that Attorney Eastep was here either the last meeting or the meeting. I think it's just the last meeting. And he had raised an issue regarding the notification process under 1214B, and our hearing officer wasn't present, so we decided to mark the matter to today, and she is present today, and I believe she's just distributed an amendment that does pertain to this to some degree.
I think Commissioner Einhorn would like to recuse himself.
I'm going to recuse myself. I've seen from voting on this security issue. Wait outside, I guess, while you're discussing it.
Okay, we'll
come here. Remember.
Yeah, please don't forget.
Yeah, to our office, if you want.
To the right, okay.
Yeah, so.
So.
Commissioners, I could start with the proposed amendment. So, Attorney Paula Perlman, I'm the hearing officer in this matter. So my proposal doesn't change the report in terms of the conclusion. It's really more to clarify the procedure set forth in 1-214 of the Act. So the proposed changes would be to paragraphs 14, 16, and 17. I provided the amendment to you just I thought it'd be easier to follow along. So the first proposed change would be to paragraph 14. In the first sentence, the word first would be removed. And then following that first sentence, the following phrase, or I should say sentence, would be added. So it would read, such review and determination must be made prior to notifying the subject of the file of the request and offering the subject an opportunity to object to disclosure. The second paragraph that recommending the amended is paragraph 16. And now what I'm just going to read what the new paragraph would read rather than indicating what would be deleted added. So the new paragraph 16 would read, it is found, however, that the respondents failed to prove that they reviewed the complaint and executive summary and reasonably determined that disclosure of such records or any portion thereof would legally constitute invasion of privacy prior to notifying Chief Wright of the request and offering him the opportunity to object. And then the last amendment would be in paragraph 17 and would simply remove, it would simply read Based upon the foregoing, it is concluded that the respondents violated section 1-214B. So that's my proposed amendment.
Thank you. Any questions on the amendment? I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move we amend the hearing officer's report in paragraphs 14, 16, and 17 as requested by the hearing officer in the sheet she gave us.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Fusashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. The amendment passes unanimously. All right. Counsel, would you like to begin?
Yes, I would. Brian Eastep on behalf of the respondents. I have no objection to the law as it's laid out by the hearing officer. But I think what the hearing officer has missed is the fact that the city, in fact, did comply with the statutes as outlined in the affidavit submitted post-hearing by Attorney Jeffrey Londrigan, which outlined that he reviewed the request, he reviewed the documents that were requested. He then received an objection from the chief to the documents being requested. He states in his affidavit that in his review, he followed these standards under 120B2 and came to the conclusion that the unredacted portions would constitute an invasion of personal privacy. Obviously, in a perfect world and knowing where the hearing officer went, this affidavit would have been drafted a little cleaner to say that he clearly did it prior to, which is what she's seeking. But I think the affidavit itself outlines in the order that it's provided that he received them, he reviewed them, he requested the opinion of the chief, and he reviewed them based upon, when he did the reviewing, the standards, which are, do they reasonably create an invasion of personal privacy? Which I'll point out that a good portion of them were found to have met that standard in the hearing officer's report. Some side items did continue to be redacted after the hearing report. So I do think the city, in fact, did not violate that section of the law, but in fact complied with it in the way that it handled the documents and in seeking only the information from the chief, who was the subject of the investigation, after the review was done internally by Attorney Londrigan. That's our position simply. He was unavailable on the date. We agreed to submit an affidavit in order to move the case along. So it's because the hearing officer did request at the hearing, what did he do in order to review the documents? I'll take responsibility for maybe the affidavit would have been drafted better to make it clear on that, but all of the requirements are contained within the affidavit. We only seek on the hearing report as it is now, that the city not being found to have violated the act as far as what needs to be done in order to have the review done prior to any redactions occurring. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Eastep.
Yes, thank you. So at the hearing, as Attorney Eastep has indicated, there was no witness. And I wanted to know, you know, what procedure did they take? You know, did they adhere to the requirements in 1-214? So I did ask for an affidavit, and they did provide me with an affidavit, which has been marked as Respondent's Exhibit 1. And I would ask for the commission actually to read the affidavit. I think it'd be helpful because based on my reading of it, they didn't actually clarify whether they made the determination prior to informing the chief. Now, maybe they did, and I asked them, you know, to clarify that in the affidavit, but it was not. So I think it really would be helpful for the commission to actually look at the affidavit because that's what I based my findings and conclusions on, that there was no witness. And so this is all I had before me. So I'm gonna, and there was no objection from the complainant with respect to this affidavit. So I didn't feel I had to reopen the hearing, you know, to get additional testimony. So I don't know.
And I can highlight.